Best wishes to all of you listening to this recording. I have the pleasure once again of being with my dear friend, Jim Hamilton. I'm Rob Christie, a 75-year-old grandpa from San Clemente, California. Jim's home is in Arizona, and we do all this by the miracle of Zoom. What a blessing. Today, we'd like to talk about language and soaring affirmations. To put some more flesh on those bones, the quality of your reality creating, you know, what you manifest is a scorecard with your connection with Source, with the divine. Jim, take it away.
Well, so Rob, it's great to be here. I love our conversations. You know, this is not, we don't have a script. We don't have anything. The only thing we have is a timer to have some idea how long we've been going. And the intent is to drive it into, divide it into about three segments. But the quote, the quality of our reality creating is a scorecard for the quality of our connection with Source, is a quotation that came out of Visionaries Thrive in All Times, my first book that came out in 2005. And in all of the years I've been writing and working on all of this, ultimately what's going on is learning how to become blended with Source, frequency of God, innate intelligence, whatever you want to call it. And that is a product of learning how to let go. In fact, I might throw in another quote kind of early on here, that resistance brings us more of the same, and allowing brings us something new and different in each moment. And the way you're going to end up accessing God, if you will, is through a letting go process. You're not going to get there by rigidly climbing a set of stairs or a rigid belief system. In fact, it's going to be absolutely the opposite. And as we touched on in the previous series, cannabis has a, you know, small amounts has a type of calming effect on the nervous system, or a certain type of relaxation shows up. And I'm talking about small amounts, for which as this rigidity drops away, we open up. And that is the name of the game, is learning how to open up so that, again, as we move away from rigidity and overload and move into allowing, we become blended with Source. And that is the biggest name of the game. And I could kind of jump all the way ahead by saying that as we become blended with Source, we become exponential in our contribution for making the world a better place.
Let me interject something really quickly here and get your feedback on it. I've been involved in the personal growth and transformation industry for four decades, and the vast majority of the advice I've received during those 40 years has been, you got to do something to get where you want to go. And I experience your work as taking 180 degrees the opposite tact and saying, no, it's not what you do, it's whether or not you allow, whether or not you are open to having a direct experience of God of some sort. If you don't, you're missing the boat.
You bring up an interesting concept, but there's, I'll give you an example. So for me, when I'm working on things, the first thing I do is make a decision. A lot of people have trouble making a decision about what they want next, but it's in making that decision, whether it's right or wrong, that I then compare what happens next as I, in other words, I make a stand on something. So it's not really just about allowing. It really isn't. You got to make a stand on what you want, and then you continue to refine it. But if you don't make that first choice point, the ability to then refine that choice point becomes kind of nebulous. So you have to have choices, and you continue to refine those choices but it's in allowing that the refining of those choices becomes available.
Thank you for the clarification.
It's actually huge, because manifesting isn't something where you sit back and you just create an apple out of thin air, because it doesn't actually work that way. But it's an evolution of understanding. And I'll give you an example, and I believe this is true. There's a lot of people that were at Maharishi International University in Iowa, Fairfield, Iowa. And what I understand from some people that lived there, whether that was that people meditated for 15 or 20 hours a day or something like that. And all they got was spacey, super spacey. Now, I meditated for my first 10 years, and actually, well, you know, I got 49 years now. But when I was as a meditator, I had goals. And that's the difference between me and a lot of those students at Maharishi International. And I'm not making light of the transcendental meditation people. I'm just using an analogy that we have to have something to do. We have to have something to push against. We have to have something to refine, for which allowing is a component of that. And so meditation plus choices actually work together the best. And so, for example, you know, I was 23 and I was harnessing the subconscious mind. I was into goal setting and meditation. And, you know, I had a 40-foot sailboat. I put the deposit on that boat when I was late. I was less than 26. February of 1976, and my birthday was in May. There I am coming down the intercoastal with my 40-foot boat. No family money, no nothing, but it's harnessing the conscious subconscious mind, goal setting, and meditation. And so allowing is a big part of it. Well, the part of it, so what you do is you decide what you want and you allow, because insights will come in and you refine what you want. You continue to refine it until the cosmos and your refined vision of what you want show up, boom, manifestation. And because the universe was a big chunk of your decision making and your choice making, you end up with something bigger than you could have pulled off on your own.
Well, Esther Hicks would say, you know, without desires, you don't draw in the energy of God, which is what keeps you going, what keeps you alive, what keeps you interested in life.
Yeah, she calls it the vortex. And I listened to Abraham Hicks, have the highest regard for Jerry and Esther Hicks. I know Jerry's gone, makes no difference. Highest regard for them and Abraham. And so, you know, one of the things Abraham would say, and I, again, highest regard for Abraham. Our thoughts are essential. Our language is essential, but our language comes from our inner being. In other words, it comes... We can listen to our language and hear where we're at internally, because a lot of us have a lot of debris. We started out with a lot of debris and a lot of errors and a lot of this and that. And allowing, by the way, is how you let that stuff go, because trying to clear it up and go in there and sort it out, that's a language all by itself. And see, what the problem is when you try to address the problem that you've been carrying your whole life, the shortcoming of that is it becomes your focus, and you'll never escape what you don't want by trying to remove it. What you do is you move to a state of what you want that is so big that it simply dwarfs the old what you don't want. And of course, that's what soaring affirmations are about. We'll touch on that later. But our language is an indicator of what we believe and what we know to be so, accurate or not. And so one of the things we want to learn to do is clean up our language, and you'll find that that goes part and parcel with this internal mechanism of better understanding ourselves, which our language naturally cleans up. And I promise you that fighting what's wrong or trying to solve all those old wounds or clear up all that old wounds, like psychology in the 80s was all about talk therapy, and all you did was you talked about the problem. And actually, psychology, I think, is kind of, when I say died out, it's kind of evolved into something else. I don't think it went anywhere big. And I guess, of course, psychologists are a great group of people, because they're into that inner mechanism, but they don't get that what you want to do is you want to build where you want to go, and you want to make it so big. And where that frankly is your connection with source. That's the biggest goal and the only goal we should have. And it will then dwarf all of our old thinking and our old wounds and our old this and that, such that they lose their relevance because our attention has become on what we want. And what we want first and foremost is our connection with source, for which then everything else unfolds.
Are there processes in your system, Jim, that would support a person in listening to their own self-talk and getting some understanding that that's a mirror of where they're at and not where they want to go?
Well, we touched on, I don't know if we've used that quote in this particular conversation, the idea that, what was it? The quality of your reality creating, how poor or high quality your surroundings are, for which you are the only person responsible. Now, somebody can come in and, give you a hard time, for which you then react to them, and that changes your reality. They didn't change it. You reacted to them, or you don't. But the point is, the quality of your reality creating is a scorecard for the quality of your connection with source. That little statement says an awful lot, because introspectively, we can see what we have in our world, how many arguments we have, or how many fights we have, or how much, or the quality of our friendships. Do they lift us up, or do they kind of hold us in shortcoming because we kind of all community together from a lower octave perspective? And so the quality of our reality creating is a scorecard for the quality of our connection with source. And we can take that apart as much as you want, but I think it's an interesting statement. It comes out of Visionaries Thrive in All Times, which came out in 2005, my first book.
It rings absolutely true for me in my own experience. And the blessing was, as I began to realize the truth of that, there was a reduced predilection to create the same thing I'd created the day before, and an openness to possibility that wasn't there before. And our relationship and the things you shared with me have been a significant part of that.
So curiously, so first off, you're open. The reason we have conversations is because you're open to them. Not everybody is. There's certain people, I'll just say, some people have a rigidity. And rigidity comes from a type of overload, or just overload, such that they can't take on anything new. They can't add anything. And so even though somebody's standing there with a, I don't know what a golden plum is, I just made that up. But, somebody has a gift for you, but it's unavailable because your system and your head and even your heart is in overload, and new things coming in as big a gift as they might be, simply aren't available. And so that game of moving away from resistance and overload is a product of allowing. For example, let's say you find yourself in resistance to what I'm saying. You have a choice of resisting it or simply allowing it. And in allowing my remark, it's not like they're going to change you or make you, you're going to get something you don't want, but allowing resistance brings you more of the same. And if you're already in resistance, we don't need more resistance. And at some point, we learn how to begin to allow on small things. And as allowing grows, resistance drops. And that's the beginning.
Share with us how soaring affirmations support one in making the transition that you're talking about.
All right. First off, soaring affirmations is a concept I developed, and maybe it'll come to me how it all originally formed. But a soaring affirmation would be where you take an affirmation. like a long time ago when I was putting my first boat together, my big boat, my 39. I had goals. In fact, one of my goals back then was suntan feet. Only way you're going to have suntan feet is, the idea is being on a boat full time. But back in the old days, an affirmation would be like, I want a new red convertible, Chevy 4-speed, 396 engine, whatever. And so an affirmation would be, I want a new red convertible. A soaring affirmation might be, the simple version of that would be how you'd rather feel, because you don't really want the red convertible. Yes, you do. But what you really want is how that red convertible makes you feel. So that's an octave up in an affirmation setting. But the truest affirmation, as we look at this from an octave perspective, instead of wanting a red convertible, instead of wanting how we feel, we really want how our connection with source delivers everything that we might ever want. So a soaring affirmation bumps up to where our affirmation is clearly interrelated with our connection with source, because our highest aspiration, our highest possibility as a human being is to become blended with source, to be re-enable that connection. So any kind of an affirmation can be up-leveled several times, like red convertible, how you want to feel, to the affirmation actually being about your connection with source, for which everything then becomes available in that kind of a reflection, bigger than what your mind would ever know that you think you need.
Well, as I listen to you, Jim, it sounds like a process I would label as spiritual maturation. In your example, you started with the desire for a convertible. Nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But then, having achieved the convertible, the possibility opened to you. Gosh, maybe Esther Hicks is right. My only job is to feel good. So you move into to that, and that opens up the possibility that, golly, what's beyond this is a simple, profound connection to source.
I like to call it a
And
partnership.
you went through all three. And your process supports other people in going on a similar journey, starting wherever they happen to be, as
So
I understand it.
let's take this a half step further, since you talk about other people. So the Map of Consciousness by Dr. David Hawkins is a arbitrary scale of 0 to 1,000. It's based on kinesiology. It's exponential or logarithmic, and the bottom of the scale, between 0 and 175, are the states of apathy, fear, grief, anxiety, rage, etc., up through pride at 175. And at 200, what I call the breakpoint on the map, is labeled courage, because it takes courage to step out of pride. It takes courage to step out of apathy. It takes courage to step out of anger and resentment and this and that. And courage is an introspective tool that begins you onto a new journey into neutrality, into spiritual reason, into allowing, into joy, into peace, and on and on. And as you move up that map, what's curious is, as you move up that map, and maybe I can put it up as part of this video for a minute and display it, as you move up the map, you move farther away from, at the very least, profound resistance when you're really at the bottom of the map. When you're in despair, that is just a variation on resistance and rigidity and overload. And as you move up the map, you move away, allowing is what allows or causes resistance and rigidity to fade, because it's the inadvertent focus and being stuck where you are that you simply go around in circles. in depression or whatever it is. All your energy is frozen and stuck. And yeah, you need help out of that for anyway. Post-traumatic stress is an extreme example of being caught in a mental circle where you can't get out of it. One of the things that works very well, as we've been touching on different kinds of psychedelics and whatever, is psychedelics, plant medicines are a very good a way of breaking that limited boundary of depression or post-traumatic stress, which is actually high beta frequency where you're stuck in that hypervigilance and you can't break out of it. So it takes more than courage, but some people do want to get help. And so the psychedelics is one of those things that breaks that. And then you can see the light of day. And then courage is where you take off. But you see, allowing is what it all takes. And so allowing actually comes from courage. It takes courage to move into allowing. Why? Because you're moving into the unknown with allowing. With resistance, you know what you're going to get, even though it's unconscious or subconscious, you're going to get more of the same, because resistance brings you more of the same. Allowing brings you something new and different in each moment, because of course, resistance is focus. Speaking of Jerry and Esther Hicks, resistance, focus, what you focus on expands. Resistance is powerful focus with often an emotional component. And it takes courage, it takes willingness, it takes wanting to move out of that. And as you do, allowing becomes bigger. And as allowing becomes bigger, as resistance drops away and allowing becomes bigger, you naturally become blended with source as a product of allowing. And the higher you go on the map in allowing, the more you become blended with source. And the fun part of that is the higher you are on the map, the more blended you are with source, the more exponential you become, to the point that one person at 700 on the map of consciousness, and 700 is a really high number, it's the beginning states of enlightenment, one person at 700 on the map counterbalances the negativity of 70 million people below 200. That says one of two things: that 10 million people below 200 aren't very powerful. They might be noisy, because that's what we have on the planet, a lot of people and a lot of resistance, and they are noisy. But one person at 700, one person blended slash partnered with God, and it's not a mind-driven experience, because allowing is not mind-driven. You have to learn how to let go to work your way up the ladder. That's why the courage, that's the ballsy part, is the ability to let go, not knowing where you're going to end up. But as you move up the map, you become blended. So one person at 700 counterbalances the negativity of 70 million. One person at 600 counterbalances the negativity of 10 million. One person at 500 counterbalances the negativity of 750,000. And that's the power of allowing, because all things humans, we need to learn how to take care of each other. We need to discover what we've learned, share it with others.
Best wishes to all of the folks listening to this recording today. You're going to have a terrific time. I always enjoy my conversations with my dear friend Jim Hamilton from the state of Arizona. I'm Rob Christie, an aging grandpa from San Clemente, California. And among other things, we want to address the following question. Let's suppose you're a house, and as a house, you have windows and doors. And what comes to you through those windows and doors are opportunities to move out of resistance into a process which is going to take you from highly resistive to open to possibility, and eventually open to the possibility of being one with God. Jim, take it away.
All right. So appreciate the opportunity to be here. And what we were talking about was the idea that consciousness is a product of allowing. And I think earlier we were talking about wounds and different kinds of belief systems people have, and different kinds of situations that people have, all of which have to be let go of, or any of them are opportunities to move into courage, to step into what's next. I think that's the metaphor for windows and doors, and being a house with all kinds of different opportunities, all kinds of different channels of, in other words, there's so many ways we can bump consciousness. There's so many ways we can move into growth, and actually we could pick from hundreds, or all the different doors in our house, all the different windows. They're all venues for changing, for the beginning process of changing our mind about becoming conscious, because the rigidity of how we hold our perceptions, our unwillingness to have new perceptions, is how we maintain our shortcomings. And so your analogy of a home or a house with windows and doors, any of those are venues by which we can, I say, grab the bull by the horn. It's actually the opposite. Any of those venues are where we can start allowing, because that becomes a stream of good where once it was rigidity. So we're touching on the map of consciousness and how people move up the map, with the scale being 0 to 1,000, 0 to under 200, states of apathy, fear, grief, anxiety, rage, and pride at 175, 200 being courage, which is the breakpoint on the map, because it takes courage to move from pride, or courage to move from the different kinds of overload and resistance and a resentment we hold for another. You know, we all seem to do that. I'm no exception. I've got my little bits of that as well. But it's in allowing what we once resisted that our growth begins. And these doorways and windows are all opportunities to find a place where we can start moving up the map into allowing and neutrality and peace and reason, spiritual reason. And so as we do, we start to become blended with Source. And being blended with Source allows the quality of our reality creating to improve, for which the quote we used a little bit ago was, the quality of our reality creating is a scorecard for the quality of our connection with Source. So as we move up the map of consciousness, as we move into more allowing, more neutrality, less resistance, the quality of our reality creating is going to show up as a reflection of that. Therefore, the idea of a scorecard.
Listening to you, I'm thinking of an old Irish quotation, the devil ye know is better than the devil ye don't. Turns out that's exactly wrong. That if you don't summon the requisite courage to let go of the devil ye know, then your opportunity to move up that map is non-existent.
But what if the devil isn't really real, and all the devil is an opportunity? So what's the quote again?
The devil ye know is better than the devil ye don't.
So the opportunity that you have, so a lot of people hold on to what they have instead of letting go to have more. So that's a similar analogy on that same. I mean, it's the same thing. Most of it, look at it, people at the very bottom and simply getting worse. But a lot of people have rigidity. They have a certain kind of comfort. That's it. And they live the rest of their life like that. And then when they get to their dying day, they go, huh, I wonder if I could have used all of this better. So I'm working on right now some really serious.
You indicate the transition, that courage is the transition point
Yeah,
on that scale.
that's right. So let's say you have stasis. Your comfort is whatever it is. You watch your same TV programs, you watch your football games, you do everything you do on Sunday, you go to work on Monday, you do it every day. I mean, that's not a particularly good analogy. It's not one I prefer to use, but and then, for example, some people then retire, and then a couple of years later they have a heart attack because they've always done the same thing, and now they're out in the wide open and they're not really prepared for it. So that's really an old analogy. But consciousness is a product of learning how to let go, for which the unknown really is unknown until you really get a handle on it, and then you realize it's all about enabling a natural state of connection with source. And it's in that magic that the whole thing really opens up. And that's where we all want to get. And then we become exponential. We become exponentially contributive to each other. Some of us are going to be first, more than
Say
ever.
a little bit more about how you personally experience source that would be helpful to our audience.
All right. So first off, the frequency of God, or frequency of God, is a relatively new term. It comes from when I started identifying coherence and God as coherence as being the closest thing you'll be able to define God as. But what I find evidence of my connection with spirit or God is the scale of the synchronicity, harmony, and order that increases in my life. So we all have synchronicity, but it's when it really elevates that it becomes not even second nature, becomes first nature. Because if you think about it, we've all had the experience of flow. We've all, and then when we realize we're in flow, then we start second guessing it. There's your mind kind of interfering. But flow actually is abundance and synchronicity combined. That's what flow is. And you can't get to flow with the mind. It's a letting go process. So partnering with God looks like levels
Excuse
of.
the interruption. Tell me again those two elements that combine to make flow.
I think what I said was prosperity. What was it? Prosperity and synchronicity. So synchronicity, harmony, and order, and prosperity are all the same thing. Synchronicity, harmony, and order, and prosperity are all the same thing. And that is what flow is made of. Because when you move into flow, there's no mind. And by the way, when you're in flow, there is no time. And by the way, when you're in flow, there is no resistance. Mind, time, and resistance are actually synonymous. We need teach you some shorthand. Luckily, we're recording this.
Oh, in the fourth grade, I stopped doing cursive and started printing because I discovered I could go faster.
There we go. There we go. So the frequency of God, we learn how to become blended with source. And again, the quality of our reality creating is a scorecard for the quality of our connection with source. And that's been our part of our something we've repeated several times today, even in an earlier video. But and what that allowing is how you get there. And allowing takes courage. Courage is letting go. It's the courage to let go to something bigger.
In your role as a teacher and creator of processes that, support other people, is the bottom line about putting out there the possibility and then you personally let go, or steering people in a particular direction that from your experience maximizes the possibility that they will be open to possibility that they haven't been open to before? You know, how does that work for you and what you've created, Jim?
Well, you know, first off, the mind is limited by what it already knows. Its ability to project forward is limited by what it knows. So there's so many things that aren't available to the mind until it's been exposed to it by some mechanism, because the mind and intuition are not of the same world. The mind is a lot more linear than that. And intuition and the mind often second guesses intuition. So clearly they're not from the same source. What I'm interested in is introducing people to ideas. And it's by the way, it works much better for people that are looking for more. So I'm available with what I call insights or tools for people that are looking for them. And frankly, the tools I have, I consider to be a little bit more sophisticated than what most people have out there teaching. And there's all the different spectrums and octaves of teaching and learning. But I think partly because I have had maybe far more access to presence than most. And again, not that many people have almost 50 years background in meditation, but the core resonance has delivered so very much more. But I prefer to work with, first off, if you can't hear me or if you can't hear new ideas, then they're not going to be much good to you. So there's some people that are actually looking for this. And that's where my audience is found. And some people, when I say are looking harder, or some people are more advanced. So what I really like to think is what I have are advanced tools for people that are more conscious, that want to bump up, I won't say faster, but there comes a point where people can take more advanced tools than they might have a couple of years ago. And accordingly, you know, I now have Visionaries Lab, which is mind-based tools, Core Resonance, which is a nervous system-based tool, and then the 508 Communities, which is different again. But so my job is to attempt to deliver what I think I know as clearly as I can to resonate with a certain component of the audience, because to drop my stuff down too far would water it down to reach a too big of an audience. And I don't see that. So I would rather take people that are 350 on the map and bump them to 550 or to 600. Those are huge jumps, but Core Resonance is capable of that. And so
I remember the day we met. It's easy to remember because it was my 74th birthday.
Okay. I guess that's right. I remember that.
We've been friends a year and a half now. And during one of the breaks at the seminar we were attending, you mentioned that you had discovered a tool that you felt was more powerful than meditation. And I almost wet my pants.
Glad you didn't. It's 74. That would not be a good sign.
And the blessing was you had one of your books in the car, and I bought it at the break. And, you know, the rest is history. And just tagging a little more onto that, I experience people, you know, without sounding arrogant, who are at my level, still in a fairly significant minority, but a growing number.
That's right.
A growing number. That's my experience of what's happening in the world. And thus a growing number of people who would be open to the tools that you have to share.
You know, I think COVID is a big demarcation between the old and the new. I don't think that we will ever go back to what was. I think there is such a vast misunderstanding about the COVID experience. I think that the COVID vaccination, that whole thing was really, really poor science. And a lot of people vaccinated, of course, they're not vaccines. It's a gene therapy, unproven. And but a lot of people have come to realize that listening to others is a lot less valuable, like the government, but a lot less valuable than it used to be. In other words, we used to look to an authority figure outside of ourselves, and I think we're going to discover that the COVID 3 years, more and more people are going to start learning how to listen to themselves and take their own advice and be more clear about taking their own advice versus some institution's advice, whether it be the pharmaceutical company or even
Which also means
natural
they're
science.
much more likely to be open to you and the processes that you have to share than they might have been before going through that horrendous experience.
So, I've been, I say, biding my time. I've been doing what I've been doing, and my sense is that the work that I have to offer is becoming more relevant. And I think I've always been ahead of my time. And as I continue unabated in my direction, slowly a bigger portion of the population begins a process of waking up and maybe even with a sense of urgency, maybe. By the way, my second book, Core Resonance, Ultimate Personal Performance, is what I called when I wrote it, is a 10 chapters about the fundamental concepts of survival. And survival isn't about water and about dry food. It's about enabling your natural state of connection with source, for which decision making and choices and right choices and all of that becomes far, far, far more available. And this is what humans need to be teaching to each other, all things human. I have a nonprofit organization, House of Coherence. And the theme of the whole thing is all things human. We don't need to be listening to institutions for their version of what humans should be doing. We have access to guidance. We need to be building that. We need to be enabling that. We need to be growing that. We need to be teaching it to and through each other and becoming empowered by our connection with source. We don't need the kind of thing that empowers artificial entities, the institutions, whatever. We humans need to plug into source, become empowered, learn how to share it. That's the game. That's the game. The only game.
Yeah, and some people would assert that the whole COVID experience is ultimately a blessing because it's accelerating the process of waking up for a very large number of people. If you've had a relative die, or if you've had a personal negative experience as a result of the so-called vaccines, that can be a real eye-opener.
Yeah, I don't follow this stuff very closely, and of course, I wouldn't vaccinate under any conditions. But somebody I read says 1600%, even in just the last few months, 1600% increase in sudden death. We've got football players falling over. We've got people that we know in Hollywood that are falling over with heart attacks and for no reason, for no good reason, and everybody. I'll just leave it at that. And so as people become more aware, and there's different things, different openings and different windows and different doors in their life that they begin to doubt the status quo as being really an acceptable and the best way for them to go forward by partnering with the state, by partnering with the pharmaceutical companies, by partnering with the school system as an institution that delivers knowledge, because the knowledge and what these institutions deliver is really incomplete. It is really incomplete, and it doesn't serve the humans. And so all I'm saying is that we need to learn how to go within. We need to learn to discover our connection with source. We need to learn how to build on that. I've been doing it a whole lifetime, and I've acquired, I've got 5 books, 180 articles. I've got technologies now divided into you know, what I call mind-based, which soaring affirmations is a component of that. I'm working with a gentleman. We'll be talking about him one day, and right-hand spin and left-hand spin. And so we're at 19 minutes now. Maybe we can wrap this up in a few minutes and go on to a third segment. And but teaching, but so what I, so all I can do is be available. I don't have any choice. You know, it's not like I'm chasing money or trying to get paid. What I'm trying to do is deliver what's inside of me that's important to let out. In fact, I couldn't not do it. I'm partnered with something bigger than myself. I'm actually a host for the frequency of God expressing through me. Then the less resistance I have, the more that expresses through me. It's going to resonate with some people. And what I want to do is be helpful to humans learning more about their very nature, because in that we become very, very, very wise, and we make better choices, and we have better
Anything
outcomes.
Else you want from me before we conclude this segment?
No, I think your analogy about house and home and windows and doors really means that we have all kinds of opportunities to grab something by the hand and decide here is where we're going to change our mind about how we think about something. So we have lots of venues where we can start by, you know, forgiveness is a great example. I mean, forgiveness is mind-based, so there's nothing wrong, but we've got to move away from resistance and rigidity, because it shuts us down and it keeps us from our connection. I would even tell you that there's parties out there that like to see the humans fighting among themselves, because it becomes their attention and their focus. How are we going to be plugged into God and learning about building that connection when you're fighting with the people you don't like? And all this polarity just drags us down. We need to learn how to become singular in our focus. Ten Commandments started with, thou shalt have no other gods before me. That goes back 8,000 years. Ten Commandments was earlier found in the Book of the Dead, Egyptian Book of the Dead. 8,000-year teaching, thou shalt have no other gods before me. We've got to go back to that. And we can still wear suits, and we can still drive convertibles, and we can still, in fact, I consider myself wild and crazy. I don't walk around, you know, with my hands, you know, in a prayer position as I walk around the sidewalk and wear robes and this and that. I'm out doing, you know, I'm doing burgers and beer, and I'm doing all the different things I want to do. I drive 80 on the freeway all the time. You know, I'm not mamby-pamby. I'm actually pushing life. I'm actually pushing it relatively hard, because I'm here. I'm doing it my way. I don't care about the rules. That mean I need to, sorry to say, drive within the speed limit? Well, if it's a 25 mile an hour speed limit, like near where I live, do I drive 25? Absolutely.
Greetings, all you folks who are listening to this recording this morning, or this afternoon, or whenever that may be. I'm with my good friend Jim Hamilton. I'm Rob Christie, a guy who's been involved in the personal growth and transformation business for decades. And would put Jim Hamilton certainly in the top five of the people I've experienced in that world with respect to the clarity and value of what he has to offer. So I would encourage you to dwell on every word. We'll start with a concept Jim has been talking about with me, soaring affirmations. Take it away, Jim.
Well, again, Rob, it's great to spend time with you. I think we do a great job conversing. I think you draw a lot of great conclusions, and we continue on really well. And of course, we're going to continue to do this. So one of the so core resonance. I wrote my first book, Visionaries Thrive in All Times. I finished it and delivered it. I introduced it in February 2005 at the first What the Bleep conference in Santa Monica. Long story, and I've worked with three physicists now, and now an archangel, which we'll talk about him one day later. The Visionaries Lab was my original website. It was associated with my first book, Visionaries Thrive in All Times. And that went from around 2004 to 2014. And then I changed over to Core Resonance. And Core Resonance is a neurofeedback based system that can rapidly quiet the nervous system much more rapidly than even a lifetime. In 3 years, I can, with Core Resonance, I can do the equivalent of a lifetime of meditation or thereabouts. And just recently, and then I got into the 508 communities, nonprofit 508 communities. That's another conversation. But just recently, I topped out with Core Resonance and wrote the article, States of Being as Feeling, identifying the higher you go in consciousness, they all have different states of feeling, like elation and ecstasy are different, happiness and joy, they're all different, and they're all octaves of consciousness. And the higher you go, you can identify these states as, like, elation is one of my favorites. I'm probably in gratitude right now, but the point is just recently I did what's called the Core Tech Trilogy. Good, I'm glad it's starting to sink in as a term. And what I did was I separated mind-based technology and nervous system-based technology, and the third component, the community, private communities. But what I want to touch on is soaring affirmations, which comes from an advancement in mind-based technology. And as we've touched on in these videos, I don't consider the mind to be that fancy of a tool. I really don't. You do need to learn how to harness it. You do need to learn to manage it, because otherwise it runs on its own. But the mind has massive limitations. And once you learn how to access presence, you will discover the mind ain't that fancy. On the other hand, it's what most people have. It's what we all carry around with us. And so learning how to use it to best advantage is one of the things I'm delivering. And soaring affirmations is that. It's a $600 technology. You can pay for it in three payments, has 100% money back guarantee, all of that. And what we're doing is we're taking a quality of affirmation. And by the way, when people come up with affirmations, usually they're really poor quality to begin with, because usually they're trying to escape what they don't want. So when people want a new red convertible, it's because they're not meeting enough new friends. They're not meeting enough women friends or man friends or whatever. And so usually they want to, their affirmation is based on something they don't have. And so the affirmation is usually confused, because it includes what they don't want as part of what they want. And so I use a type of affirmation that's seasoned and proven, and even I could rewrite those, but I use them for a reason. And it's a series of 10 affirmations. There's actually a little bit more to it. There's a foundational concept, and then there's 10 affirmations. And you do the foundational concept every day. You write it every single day. And then you do one of the 10 affirmations. And then from there, a soaring affirmation is an upgrade from what you've written from existing material. Again, it has a certain amount of seasoning and a certain amount of proof to it as being quality as far as an affirmation. It's about all of it's about God. It's all of it about enabling our connection with Source. And what I'm saying is we can use this existing material and we can upgrade that, because what we want to do is personalize what's true for us. And so we use a template of affirmations, and then we upgrade them by how our personal thinking can evolve beyond the affirmation to become a custom, truer version of an affirmation with our connection with Source. In other words, it becomes a customized affirmation. And generally, because of the mind, there's shortcomings with all of this. And so what I've created is a structure where we can climb the affirmation scale. And as we do so in a mind-based technology, while there's limitations of what it can achieve, it's also very affordable. But we can learn how to blend with the frequency of God through our thinking. And what we're really doing is saturating the mind. Earlier, we talked about the idea that we all have wounds and we all have old stories and we all have old stories and we all have old stories. And most people think that you need to clear those up before you can go forward. What you really need to do is saturate the mind with a really high quality type of thinking. And that's what Soaring Affirmations delivers to you. It's a 100-day process. You do it every single day. I'm not saying you're going to do it in 100 days. But it has, I say, a little bit intense. But what we're doing is we're reestablishing what the mind knows. We're force-feeding it in a way. And, of course, it's an affirmation. It's God-based material. And it's not a doctrine. It's just a way to free up the thinking of what goes on in our head so that our focus is becoming clear about our connection with source in an affirmation type mechanism, because affirmations work, and the higher quality they are, the more effectively they work. And again, most affirmations. So we create realities by one of three mechanisms: resistance to what we don't want. That is huge focus. Resistance, you add some emotion to it very often. And resistance to what we don't want is one way we create our realities. Another way we create our realities is by choosing what we want based on what we don't want. And most thinking at best, or most thinking, yeah, most thinking at best is in that realm. We're trying to escape what we don't want by what we want. And then the third way of creating reality is visionary mode. And that's where Soaring Affirmations comes from. That's the idea. We learn how to move away from what we don't want and be singular on our focus. And we learn how to customize through our own thinking a custom version. And it changes each time through the 100 days. And we continue to refine it. And as we do, the mind becomes saturated with a new type of thinking, for which that then becomes our prayer. It becomes our output. It becomes our, what's the word I want? It becomes our perception, because we then, as we saturate the mind with a new type of thinking, that's what we pick out in the world. And so we witness new things because we're saturating the mind with a new type of thinking. That's what Soaring Affirmations is about. And it's a really powerful program. It's the best you can do with the mind. We want to move away from what we don't want, and it takes a discipline type program to do that. And that's what Soaring Affirmations about. It's designed as a 100-day program. It's $597. It can be done in three payments. 100% money back guarantee. You do have to do the lessons, and I'm interrupted. There's somebody interrupting our call here with something else, so it kind of threw me a little bit. But so I've done Soaring Affirmations. I do it as a system. I originally developed it in 2004, 2005. I did it again in 2008, 2013, 2016. All three physicists I work with have come out of the Soaring Affirmations. And all of my advancement comes from first harnessing the mind, because you're not going to go anywhere until you have dominion over the mind. And we do that by feeding the mind a certain type of thinking, for which it will then adapt to what we teach it. And it's actually called Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity, and Guidance Light. And so you see, when you start enabling a natural state of connection with source, guidance begins to show up. Because it's a mind-based program, it has certain kind of limitations. That's why I call it Guidance Light. But the scale of synchronicity, harmony, and order, and manifestation is huge, because we've learned how to We've learned how to saturate the mind with a type of thinking. So the mind repeats what we teach it. And if we don't teach it anything, it simply runs on its own, and there's your shortcoming. So soaring affirmations, prosperity, and guidance light. Interesting stuff. Highly recommend it. I'm on a call once a week with it for whoever's involved in it. We can do a little bit of private stuff, etc. But that's what soaring affirmations is all about.
Listening to you talk about soaring affirmations, correct me if I'm wrong on this point, you're addressing someone who might very well enjoy the red convertible and is far enough along in their process to either already believe or strongly suspect that that is not going to be the be-all and end-all of their journey, that there is a desire for something beyond the red convertible, something bigger, something right, more compelling.
Well, but you see, so this is how my growth started. I started by goal setting and harnessing the subconscious mind. So I say you have to have dominion over your affairs, and you have dominion over your affairs by first having dominion over your mind. You are not your mind. You are not your body. Or something else you're not. I forget what the third one is. But you are separate from your mind. You are separate from your body. You are awareness. And so the first thing we want to do, being in a body, is have dominion over the mind and its output. And that's what affirmations, it's one of the very best ways to saturate the mind with a new type of thinking, which we have authority over. So that's how soaring affirmations are used. And it's infinitesimally inexpensive for what it produces. And then 100% merit guarantee. So that doesn't mean you can't have a red convertible, but the idea that so red convertible, you're driving around it, that's all ego. In other words, the lower version of I want a red convertible so I can track lots of chicks. I'm being silly, but see, that's all ego. And that's the shortcoming of that. So, but it's the beginning of harnessing our affairs by learning how to establish, or we discover that by being really clear on what you want, you can have what you want. Next thing you know, you want to upgrade what you want. Because what we really want is our connection with source in an intact manner, for which we get what I call the ride of a lifetime.
So speaking for my fellow spiritual seekers, the message I get from you, Jim, it's not enough just to meditate. There are other pieces of the puzzle you've discovered that one must necessarily address.
So meditation is the beginning of an introspective experience. That's what meditation's about. Because introspection is where we have to go. That's where all the growth is found, is in introspection. And a lot of people have introspection, you know, on their deathbed and all this and that, and that would all be the case. But like I said, and I get this from relatively personal experience from others, was that some people in the Maharishi International University, and I think they call it something else now, and I'm definitely not dissing it, because I have the highest regard for Maharishi, and I have the highest regard for what those guys have accomplished with Maharishi effect and all those kinds of things. But I understand that there were a lot of people in Fairfield, Iowa, as students, that meditated and meditated and meditated and meditated with an understanding, misunderstanding that meditation would get them there. But what meditation does is, I started to say your legs atrophy if you meditate too much. And you can easily meditate too much. You really can, because it becomes an escape. And so what occurs to me after all my years of meditation, I realized that that meditation, being a really important part of my life, was still always combined with goal setting and harnessing the subconscious mind. And I retired at 30 with a 40-foot sailboat. I mean, that's almost no family money. I barely got out of high school, and you know, I've said this repeatedly, and I try to make the point that I sit here many, many, many years later, and the idea that I had a gorgeous 40-foot sailboat. You can find it, coreresonance.com/natural habits, probably with a hyphen between natural and habits. That was the name of the boat. My Cuba race and all the different things I did. Hell, I think it was 27 or 27 when I sailed to Cuba, 29 maybe. It was 1979, so I guess I'd be 29. Third place in my class, got a trophy and my name in Yachting Magazine, 20, 29 years old. No education, just making shit up, doing it my way. And I continued. Now I got a bunch of books. And so I've lived my life very, very fortunately. Very, you know, I've been very, very, very fortunate. And I didn't have help from my dad or my parents or this or that. All of my education came from an internal reckoning that started early. And I had a rough growing up as a kid and all that. But none of that was bigger than, nothing was more important in my connection with Source than I became. I wasn't that many years into meditation where I discovered that meditation is moving out of the mind and learning how to listen with the nervous system, like a living antenna system. And that came to me so long ago that my center is my nervous system, and listening with the nervous system, and we can talk about that in another call sometime, another video, but being receptive to your connection with Source, for which all the magic then shows up. But you also got to have your goals and what you want, and at some point your quality of your goals gets higher and higher, and you continue to refine them constantly, and then they manifest, and then the next set of goals and things you want. And, but then again, guidance shows up at some point. And but I still have influence over what I'm still active in what I want to do, for which guidance partners with me. And here I am, you know, doing the kind of thing we're doing right this minute.
Earlier in this segment, you shared what I found to be a very compelling opportunity in soaring affirmations. For those who found that compelling or who are curious about next steps, are there a few more suggestions you might make as to where they could go after they finish listening to this segment in order to further explore what might be open to them in working with you?
Well, so a couple of things. One, my website is Core Resonance, R-E-S-O-N-A-N-C-E, Core. And actually, Core stands for C-O is coherence and R-E is resonance, coreresonance.com. And you can download my second book, Core Resonance, Ultimate Personal Performance, which is 10 chapters on survival, but it's really about the maintenance of your center, the maintenance of your core, the core of your being, because you don't want to get into overload so that you lose access to your connection with Source. So that download, that you can download that book real easily, second book, it's an ebook. I have, and by the way, then there's an email series that shows up after that. I think 10 emails, and it's more descriptive about core resonance and this and that. But you can go into coreresonance.com/contact and do a 30-minute Zoom call with me at no charge. I will talk with anybody. And what I want people to do is realize that there's more than they think there is. And the magic of it all is just huge. It's just huge. And we kind of give up our old personality. We take on a new personality of one of more allowing and more. Again, there's nothing mamby-pamby about it. I am not mamby-pamby at all. I am wild and out there in my connection. I'm living life. I don't want to say hard and fast because it's not quite that crazy, but I do what I want. I do what I want. I do it. I spoil myself like nobody's business. In fact, I will often go, what do you want to do next? And whatever comes up, that's what it is. Hopefully it's not driving to Florida from Sedona, but you know, I will do what I want to do. And I've always been like that. And I have the tools to pull it off. And I encourage others to learn about that.
One of the mistakes I have made from time to time is listening to a presentation as powerful as what we have heard from Jim Hamilton today, and then saying something like, well, I'll mark on my calendar or mark on a piece of paper when I'm going to take the next step. I would strongly encourage you, if you were listening to this, to take the next step right now. Go to Jim's website and pick one of the numerous opportunities open to you, either downloading Jim's book or signing up for a free 30-minute session. Do it now. You know, don't let another day pass by not availing yourself of an opportunity to take that next step up the ladder.
Well, you know, I like to work with the idea of resonance and the kind of things that are important to me. They're important to others. I'm not into volume so much as I am into quality. In fact, volume has never been the answer, ever. It's far more about quality. And so for people that, you know, you can dig around on my website. I got lots of articles. The Maharishi effect is really a powerful idea. The map of consciousness is really a powerful idea. There's an article that was written in 1922 by two Columbia University professors entitled "Our Inventions Inevitable?" And what it documented was 400 years of history from 1922 earlier, so back to 1600s or whatever. And they documented inventions and discoveries and processes that were invented and discovered by simultaneously by different parties. I'll give you one example, as simple as it sounds, is that everybody knows the Wright brothers invented heavier than air flying machines, but also Pierpont, what was his name? Pierpont Morgan Langley was his last name, for which Langley Air Force Base was named after. He invented airplanes at the same time. And curiously, they were only 250 miles apart, even though Wright brothers did most of their work in Akron, Ohio, but they flew at Kitty Hawk, which is only 250 miles from the Potomac. And initially, Pierpont Langley, he was initially accredited with the invention of airplanes. And he was with the Smithsonian, and eventually was discovered and corrected that the Wright brothers flew before Pierpont. And so these guys were totally unknown to each other. But same thing with telescopes and steamboats and thermometers and calculus. All these things are invented by parties simultaneously and totally unknown. What that means is our connection with source is everything. We need to learn how to enable it, and enabling it, our worlds grow and we become more effective and we become exponential in our contribution. The humans have got to learn to work together. My world and the House of Coherence is all about all things human. We help each other, we empower each other, and we do that by our central connection with source. And without that, we kind of meander around. Thank you.